Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm your host, Shane Bacon. This week's episode with Jeff Shackelford is brought to you by OGIO. OGIO is your single destination spot for the best golf bags in the business. Durable, lightweight, innovative. OGIO allows every type of golfer out there an option from carry to cart with all types of price points. If you haven't taken a look at their selection, visit OGIO.com right now and give the Silencer Stand golf bag a look. The carbon colorway will make you dig in the pockets for your wallet. OGIO.com, OGIO.com now. Don't forget, follow us on social media, on Twitter, at The Clubhouse Pod, at Shane Bacon. You can follow me on Instagram, at Shane Bacon as well. We have a newsletter that rolls out two times a week. It might roll out a few more times next week as we near the Nat Masters. A lot of fun stuff coming up as we get closer to the first major of the year. I went long with our guest, Jeff Shackelford, so I figured I'll cut the intro short. Let's get to our guest. And we welcome into the clubhouse for the first time, Jeff Shackelford. Jeff co-hosts the Shack House podcast along with running jeffshackelford.com. He pops up on Morning Drive and Golf Central Weekly. He's a senior writer at Golf Week. You can follow him at Jeff Shackelford. That's G-E-O-F-F-S-A-H-A-C. Goodness, that might be the biggest intro I've had doing this.
Yeah, just Google Jeff and golf with Jeff with a G in golf and you're good.
Well, it's a busy time of year, of course, and I appreciate you jumping on. And I wanted to start with something that you actually brought up to me last week in Austin during an episode, a recent episode of the Clubhouse. I told Tron Carter that there were some 200, 250 players that I think could win a major. And you came at me in the media center, gloves off.
Yeah.
And you said you didn't totally agree, but you had a different point of why you didn't agree. And I wanted you to expand on it. So I think that there's that many golfers out there that are capable of winning a major, and you had a different different take on that that doesn't exactly say you don't agree, but it says the reason you think should be added to that, almost like an addendum to it.
Yeah, I get a little tired of the narrative that we've never had so many great players, the fields have never been deeper, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's disrespectful to players of previous generations, namely. And I do believe, though, that it is probably technically accurate that more players can win today. More players are at a certain level. However, I would say it's not because they are just wonderfully bred superhuman people, but a number of factors have made them better. And I think there's a discussion to be had whether it's good for the game, because I sense that we have elevated some people who are very good. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're great at what they do, but we've maybe allowed them to get away with a few more loose shots, while somebody who's truly elite and truly a once-in-a-lifetime type player maybe has some of their advantage taken away. And that bothers me. It's mostly technology and equipment that does this. But I also think that a lot of other factors do deserve credit, and those are things you can't take away, nor should you. Things like better instruction and TrackMan, and those are just sort of natural progressions. Even maybe golf course maintenance might even play a role. But so that was my main point, that you may be correct that more players are capable of having that one special week. I was sitting in a lot of traffic, and so I was getting very irritated. Because I don't like the narrative for those two reasons. One, that it takes away from players of past generations who were playing with different kinds of equipment. And then also, I'm just not feeling great about the possibility that a Tiger or a Phil Mickelson, one of these once in a lifetime players, may have been cost a few big wins because equipment elevated some other people to a different level.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we're really in a place right now in golf where it almost goes against that idea that I feel like 2017 has been the year of the hot golfer, the year of the streak. I mean, we saw it with Matsuyama, we saw it with Justin Thomas, in a little way we saw it with Adam Hadwin. I mean, he went on a 4 or 5 week mm-hmm. stretch
sure.
where he was playing unbelievable golf, and of course now with Dustin Johnson, you know, these top talents get hot and they do seem somewhat unbeatable. But at the same time, you know, it wasn't long ago where Darren Clarke or Rich Beam or Keegan Bradley were winning majors. And I mean, you're not hearing a whole bunch about those types of names anymore. So I just feel like my point is that, and again, it's probably because of what you're saying, the fact that equipment is allowing these players to continually be competitive. I mean, I've talked to guys late in their 40s that say they hit it further than they did when they were 20. you know, and you know, they're able to see exactly what they're doing wrong, and it's their eye that's getting to see it. I think, you know, it's a benefit to players that do that. On the flip side, I think you're seeing some guys that are in their 40s and 50s that are leaning on this, and it almost hurts their golf game in a way, because this is not have they ever played. Maybe they're field players or something like that. But, you know, it's interesting because we look at the big names and we hope the big names win the events when we go to the majors. Let's be honest. You know, we have to root for narratives. Yeah. But, you know, if a no-name upsets Rory McIlroy at the Masters, I almost feel like the golf world's disappointed and doesn't embrace the fact that, you know, the 70th or 80th ranked player in the world wins that big event. You know, they almost would rather see the guy that's top five in the world do it.
Do you think that maybe that sense that from the fan that does feel that disappointment, it comes from some sort of subconscious sense that equipment today has, it's a difficult discussion because I don't want to badmouth anybody who's made it to that level. They are great golfers. It's just that I sense that the size of the driver, in particular, ahead has probably allowed some people to get away with some misses at key times that maybe elevates them just a little bit. And I wonder sometimes. It's fascinating, Shane, what's happened more and more in the last few years when I've had random conversations with people about golf who have no idea that I've written a book bitching and moaning about technology overtaking the game, how they'll just offer it up to me. And I wouldn't even say these are hardcore fans. And I'm fascinated by that. And you know, I'm a casual tennis fan, so I kind of can understand where they're coming from, because I used to have the same tennis really lost me in the Pete Sampras years. And tennis has me back, and I know you're a big tennis guy. Tennis has me back because I sense that they've made modifications to the ball at their Grand Slam events that have heightened the importance of understanding the surface and then also just skill. And I may be wrong on that, but I think that the records of those top players suggest that whatever modifications they did make with the ball, and by the way, Shane, that is a difficult thing to find out. They keep that top secret for some reason. But I think that's what's fascinating to me, is that the casual fan will say these things to you and suggest that there is a certain something that they feel is missing. Now, there's also the other another tangent we don't want to probably go down, but the relatability factor, which I've always felt strongly about, that people, when they can't relate to 425-yard drives, they start to pull away, because golf always had a relatability factor. So, these are, I think, important issues, because we want the game to be popular. We want people to like watching it.
Well, what you ran a poll on your website and through social media, basically asking people off the heels of this WGC Dell Match Play, you know, what did they think about the golf course, and basically it playing firm and fast, and we've seen drives. I mean, when you see on your screen somebody hits a 423-yard drive, it's like you said, it doesn't make any sense. It's like guys running, you know, a two-minute mile. I mean, it's just so inhuman that you can't really understand. I mean, I would say I hit the ball decently far, and when you think 423, I was watching yesterday with a buddy of mine, and he said, are they that much longer? And I was like, they're not that much longer. It's just the golf course and everything is almost the perfect storm in a sense. Plus, I mean, this goes back to the Shambly Rory argument from earlier in the year, but, you know, these guys are doing everything possible with technology and everything,
yes,
to find the exact moment then when they can hit the golf ball to where it will go as far as humanly possible. And you see it in the swing of Justin Thomas.
Yeah.
You see it in Rory. I mean, they're using technology to their advantage, as they obviously can. It's just producing numbers and stuff that, when we watch it as golf fans, when you take a step out of your analyst seat and you're a golf fan and you go, I don't understand what 423 means. 423 used to be a long par four.
Right. Well, a couple things there. One, I heard Brandel talking about that a little last night. I love Brandel. I think he's great, but I don't get his anti-TrackMan thing, because if he embraced TrackMan, he'd understand that's how they're dialing in these launch conditions that he thinks I don't know why he dislikes it, but he doesn't like it. So that's number one. But what stood out to me, and you worked the event, so you were watching a lot on PGA Tour Live, but it's not the 423 that shocked me. It's when you see on the 12th hole that they carry it past the end of the fairway.
Right.
That's when you know. The roll is a different issue, which is an interesting one. All the stats show that they're actually getting less roll than they did 10, 15 years ago, or about 10 years ago when a lot of this started getting tracked. But this was a week where we actually got to see roll because the fairways were cut tight. They were firm. It didn't rain that hard. And unlike Augusta, where they treat the fairway so differently to slow down the drives, this didn't have that. And it's basically the same combination of grasses. It's Bermuda overseeded with rye, just like Augusta, except Augusta grows it up. I don't know what it is, but let's say it's a half inch, and then they push it kind of down towards the tee, and it cuts down on roll so much. But anyway, to the general, the bigger topic is, yeah, I threw that out there because I saw on social media what you saw, where a lot of people were in awe, but also you can tell there's that consternation, like, is this good? And I made the case on Morning Drive today that I think it was great in the case of certain holes that got better. 13, probably into the wind, became a risk-reward hole when it wouldn't have been. And that shot Rahm hit was unbelievable in the final match. But then the 12th hole where Dustin's hitting an easy wedge and Rahm's yelling at a ball to stop that's a gap wedge into a par five that's tough to take. That's just and what's really hard for me as an architecture lover, that hole is so good. It is so neat. It's one of the best holes Pete Dye's ever done. And there are all these great elements to it that in a match, when a player is kind of in between going for it or they're hitting a long club in, just make the match that much more interesting. And when it's just a drive and a wedge, those dynamics are gone. And it didn't obviously take away from the day. But if you know those things, you're like, ooh, that would have been a little juicier. Of course, those two hit it so far, they had probably ironed into that hole. Even if you backed up the tee 50 yards.
Yeah, I mean, and Dustin wins, of course, three in a row. I mean, people are talking a lot about Dustin Johnson and what he's done. And I think that the interest surrounding Dustin right now is, for golf people, I think this has been one of those moments we've been waiting for 6 and 7 years,
yeah,
is the moment Dustin starts to dominate. And I think we all saw it in him with his talent and his ability. And now I just feel like his short game and his putting has kind of gotten to the same level, and it's scary to see. We asked this on golf.com Tour Confidential. I wanted to ask you, and first of all, it's a question we could even answer, but do you see Dustin when he's at his best, when he's got his A-plus game, is that better than everybody else's, or are there 5 or 6 players that are able to get to that same level when they're really, really, really striking it?
Oh, I think it's better than anybody else's by a lot, just because now he's got the maturity on his side. He's got the experience. He's been to all these courses. He's been through all of it. And then you merge that with the talent and the putting. It's just frightening. It's for the other players. It's great for the game because he's a huge fan favorite. And it's fun for me to see somebody like him kind of go the traditional route. We've had a lot of young players suddenly burst on the scene, do well again, which is part of the discussion you had with Tron Carter, which is interesting. To kind of delve into. I worry about that as much as I don't want to see people suffer, but I do worry that we've had a lot of players come out, have quick success, and then hit a wall. Whereas where Dustin is so fun to watch, because here's kind of somebody who has had that traditional route of some great moments, some heartbreak, some epic heartbreak. And now you sense and personal stuff and whatever happened with his 6-month leave and all that. And now you sense all that's behind him. Life is stable. He's physically healthy. And, oh, my gosh, you know, all he has to pretty much do is not hurt himself in the gym and keep doing what he's doing. And he could have an epic year, because there's just what golf course can he not play?
Right, especially with the ones lined up for majors. I mean, we always, of course, relate all of this stuff back to major championships when you're talking about these type of guys. I mean, Dustin still only has the one major win, which is still kind of crazy to think. But you have to think that, as you said, as long as he avoids injury and, you know, nothing crazy happens, I mean, it would be shocking to see him not win one of these four, especially with some of the golf courses that are coming up. What's funny, you mentioned that you know, the youth movement in the sense of 19, 20, 21-year-old guys coming up and expecting to win so fast. I saw, you know, Casey Wittenberg win this past weekend on the web. And I mean, this is a guy that I played AJGA golf with, and he was the Tiger Woods of our year. I mean, you hear so much about 2011. You know, this was more the 06, the 02 group. And, it's so cool to see him. It's you forget about some of these names like Casey Wittenberg and James Vargas and these guys that were unbelievable amateur players, and they're still out there battling. And it almost goes back to what you're saying is they took their lumps, they've continued to take their lumps, and yet they're still doing it, still grinding, and at times still able to go out there and beat some of the best players in the world. So, you know, it's the other look at it, really. It's the other look of professional golf in a way is this guy hasn't given up on his dream yet, and I think what you're saying is you're scared if a 21-year-old that has a lot of talent doesn't win for 3 or 4 years, you know, they might get so frustrated they don't want to play anymore.
Well, I'm concerned slightly. The one thing that makes me feel okay for them is that the reason I see that burnout happening is that they made a lot of money.
Exactly.
They don't really need the work anymore. So we're talking about a first world issue here, but I'm not comfortable with how hard we ride these young players and expect them to be all things wonderful, consistent, and all over social and being the life of the party and all that. It puts a pressure on them that this is, let's face it, this is not a young person's game. It never really has been. I believe the technology has allowed people to be more mature, seemingly, than they are. And so that's great. We get some great moments and fresh blood, and that gets people excited. But what does that do to career longevity? And again, they've made a lot of money. So if they do become burnouts and they've made a lot of money and they can retire, that's fine. It's the ones I worry about that leave college too soon. You know, the stuff we see in basketball, and that's the side that I don't like seeing for the game, because ultimately we know that the sweet spot is 30 to 35, really, historically anyway.
Right. And you were a guy, I always kind of turn to you and check your side or something when somebody does something zany and youthful or zany and goofy. So with that, I turned to Bryson DeChambeau for a moment, and I just wanted your thoughts. What are your thoughts on Bryson DeChambeau's first full year as a professional golfer?
My thoughts are that he's still so intriguing, and I think the world of him, and I'm fascinated to watch him play. I think he's made a couple of mistakes on the side of trying to maybe do too much. You know, he came out to Torrey Pines after 2 days at the PGA show, and he shouldn't have played, and I don't know who to blame for that. It's exciting that he wants to launch clubs, and he's got a message, and he's great with the kids. If you watch after the round, you know, he's got a star presence, but some of the decision-making on scheduling and things has, left a lot to be desired. And, let's face it, it's a boring topic, but scheduling is a big, big deal these days. I mean, Jordan Spieth made mistakes scheduling, and it may have cost him a chance at a Grand Slam, or it may have given him a year where he went to Augusta with his B-minus game. The good news is he still almost won, but he was edgy, and he was off last year. I mean, you watch him swing now, and you know, he didn't have a great match play, but just watch him, his body language on the course. You know, he's hanging his head a little, whatever. He's losing a match to a guy he'd never heard of a week ago. And that could make you mad, but you watch him, you watch his swing. He's sticking his finish. You know, a lot of things just look, everything just looks a little tighter and better. And, you feel like, well, there's somebody who's kind of pacing himself better. And so it's not a sexy topic, but scheduling is a big, big deal for these guys. And it's just amazing how often, they don't handle it well, and it's not always their fault. They're getting pulled a lot of different directions.
Yeah, and I was going to bring up Spieth in a little bit, but I figured now would be a great time. I mean, he comes out last week and basically tells the media, you know, that the 12th hole is something at Augusta National. It's going to be something that's going to carry with him, and I feel like it made headlines because it's got to make headlines. I mean, he would say something about that. People are going to take it for what it is, but I mean, you can't ever expect him to forget that. I mean, can you? These are moments that don't ever leave people when you have something like that happen. That's not to say he can't win again or can't win this year, but I mean, he's always going to remember 2016 because it was a collapse at the biggest of big stages for somebody that had never really had to deal with that before.
I suppose, I guess where I differ is that he's come back and won at Colonial. He had a big lead at Pebble and he won. So he's put the part behind him that would be, well, did I just choke badly under pressure? And I think he's probably got to be pretty aware that he went there last year. I mean, he just wasn't good last year, Shane, at the Masters. It was not his. And there, I mean, I just couldn't believe that he was contending. And he just, and then it started to get a little bit better. And you're like, well, I guess he just can do this. And you know, he had that moment. So I think for a good player, you just say, well, I went there with my B minus game and I still should have won. That's got to be give you so much confidence. And I just, I think he can't put it past him. It sounded to me like, though, from his comments, that really the problem he has is that people keep coming up to him and issuing their condolences as right. if he lost a limb or he lost his life. And I think that's what's wearing him out. And then I don't even know if it was us, the press, asking as much as it is that thing. And it's a nice thing. It's nice that people do that, but it's like, okay, people, he's moved on. It's time to move on. Let's get to 2017 and let him play golf and stop bringing it up.
Yeah, and he wins, you know, he wins the Australian Open, he wins at Pebble Beach. I mean, this is a guy that, as you said, really besides the match play, has been impressive for 3, 4, 5 months. I mean, he's just continued to play solid golf and put himself in contention. My question is, you and I, when we play golf, and we play golf at a place we know or a golf course that, you know, we play at a lot, maybe it's the place we're members of or whatever, but you know, there's certain holes there at every golf course for a regular golfer, for an amateur golfer, where you get a little jittery on the tee. My question is, do pros experience that? Does Rory experience that when he's standing on 10 tee at Augusta? Does Spieth experience that when he's standing on 12 tee at Augusta? And I just wonder, at the biggest of stages, the only place that a major's played at year in and year out, are those little things that we experience as well, but certain holes yeah. that they might have a little bit of jitters on, that they're not as comfortable as other holes?
Well, we know they have those holes. I mean, Tiger hates the first tee shot there, and
every
Tiger
first tee
has
shot.
His holes. Yeah, and then in that one, just really, I think that one started it all. But I'm sure that if Jordan for 4 days in a row hits a pull yank left into the hillside, then we know there's an issue. But I guess that's what I'd be curious to see, is if he has that look on that tee from now on. But I'm going to guess the most of the guys, it's more about a tee shot with a driver and a weird, you know, the 11th hole. I don't know if anybody feels good about that tee shot out there. but there are holes like that where you just see guys, you just know they don't like it. And they've mentioned it, and you watch them, and they go, and they don't take a good, comfortable swing. It's the cruelty of our sport. And that's why you hear them so often say it. Love the course, it fits my eye. Well, what it means is there are none of those weird tee shots where the guy just can't get the OB out of his mind, or can't get whatever the overhanging tree is, or whatever it is that bothers him. So it will be interesting to watch. But I don't know. I just for some reason I have a sense it's not going to be the issue with him. I feel like Dustin Johnson's the issue for him.
He's got to focus way more on that 6'5" guy. That's right.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole! It's in the hole!
Let's take a quick break in our conversation with Jeff Shackelford to tell you about the first golf major of 2017. And a reminder, it is next week. To celebrate, DraftKings.com is hosting a free fantasy golf contest with $100,000 in total prizes up for grabs. Whether you live and breathe golf or you're looking to try a new fantasy sport now that football's over, 1 week fantasy golf at DraftKings is for you. And fantasy golf on DraftKings is easy to play. Just pick 6 golfers before the tournament tees off next Thursday, then just sit back and follow the action live. Rack up points for streaks, for hole performance, tournament finishes, and more. Outscore the competition and you win. You can't get closer to the action than this. Millions of fantasy sports fans just like you have experienced the excitement of DraftKings. Now it's your turn. So here's your call to action. The tournament starts next Thursday. So go to DraftKings.com, get free entry in the $100,000 contest for golf's first major with the promo code Clubhouse. That's code Clubhouse to play free for your share of $100,000 in total prizes. Only at DraftKings.com, the destination for 1 week fantasy sports. Eligibility restrictions may apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Now, back to Jeff. Golf has moved younger, as you know, and it's not just players. I mean, media has moved younger, and you, tongue-in-cheek most of the time, take digs at millennials, and you'll have fun with millennials. Yeah. And my question is, do you really hate millennials?
No, God, no. I, you know, Shane, I love all things millennials in terms of, I love everything millennials have done for our culture in terms of better food everywhere we go. And I love social media. I think it's great. No, my issue is it's the pandering, the pathetic whoring to millennials that you see by people who have no clue about what millennials want and who are just following these ridiculous consultants or whoever. And so that's number one. And it's almost always not what millennials want if you ask them. And, you know, so that's a big part of it. But and we've seen it in golf in ways that are I think, just really nauseating at times. But then the other thing that bothers me is that I have no problem with catering to certain people, but then acting like other generations are not important, I think, is what turns a lot of people off. And I think millennials are more sophisticated than a lot of these entities and media give them credit for being. And so that's what bothers me is, and I've had to, as you can imagine, kind of evaluate what I do with writing a blog. And I could have gone all in on that sort of approach, and I've decided to go the other way. I've got like three really long posts this week I'm doing, and I've just decided to stick with sophistication and smart. And because I feel like that's what is needed out there. And I don't care what age group is reading that. If I'm pressing buttons with people that are 80 and 20, that's what I want. And so the way they're targeted and the way we sold out sophistication, I think, in our sport in pursuit of this mythical person is really what annoys me. But no, I was Congress Street last week. Come on, that's like a millennial, you know, hotbed. I love all that. I love all those places to eat, the cool shops, the typewriter fonts, you know, the lowercase, all the telltale signs. But no, I think it's fantastic where we've gone in most things. It's just it's more of how the media reacts to them and doesn't handle how to report to them.
Yeah, and in golf,
does that sound
for sure? No, well, I'm right there with you in that. I think that you and I are in total agreement there. Where it, again, first ask them and they'll tell you that's not the way to go. And second, people that spend money in golf are between the age of 35 and 70 or 35 and 80. I mean, these are the people that go to Bandon and Stream Song and Cabot, and these are the people that are buying new golf clubs. You know, it's just, I think it's funny that, as you said, you sell out a group, which is the people that love golf, really, to attract a group of people that probably aren't that interested in it right now, and do it in a way you almost disrespect the group that's, you know, the 45-year-old guy that has a couple of kids that plays, you know, tries to play once a weekend and would love to get his hands on a, you know, an epic driver or some new golf balls. And I almost feel like those people get forgotten a lot of the time. And it's like you said, it's just simply, it's feeding them information and not acting like they're idiots. That's the true key here.
Well, and I, for instance, I have a post going up. Now, see, I think there are benefits to all this. I'm curious what you think, but I wrote a piece for the Golf Week digital issue this week about how match play is enjoying a renaissance. And there are a number of reasons why, but I feel like it's just begun. I feel like we're going to see a lot of match play events over the next decade added or current events changed to match play. And I attribute that to the sense of the people running the game that we need to pander to people who have shorter attention spans, which, by the way, are not just millennials. It's everybody.
Right.
But it's fine. If it makes them feel good about that they're going to get more millennials, I want more match play. I mean, the difference last week when you're out there walking and you saw it on doing all the PGA Tour Live stuff is just the game is faster. It's still not fast, but it's moving. It's just not so languid and stiff and stale. And match play brings out emotion, and it's easy to understand. It's all these different things, and I see why Keith Pelley's into it, and I think the tour is going to be more into it, and it's just so funny what happened. You know, it's basically like switching to round robin at this event. The team play events continuing to do well, and the NCAA format change. Those, it wasn't a lot, but those things have suddenly, oh, and by the way, the one common denominator in all that is television likes all these things better and now realizes the product is more important than worrying about, oh gosh, if a match ends 45 minutes early, what are we going to do?
Right.
And so these are all great things that are prompted in part by trying to get the game younger and faster and hipper and all that. So there are ways that we can use that pandering to our advantage. And I think that the match play, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I just can't get enough of match play events. There's just so much more going on, but in a fun way.
Right. And I say, you know, I did PGA Tour Live this week. You've mentioned it, but I think it's the best week of the year to watch and be involved with PGA Tour Live because those days matter. I mean, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday matters. I almost, in a way, wish it would go back to the single elimination format. I think there was a couple of players
really? That
would agree to that. Well, my only problem with the grouping format is what we saw a lot this week. And, of course, some things, you know, you can't hate on. I mean, of course, you're not going to say anything about Jason Day or Gary Woodland, who had family issues
right.
and had to get out of there. But, I mean, there were some players that had pulled out that basically gave – you know, some top name players like Rory McIlroy, no chance of advancing
yeah.
over their final day.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
Yeah, and they're out there playing for nothing. I mean, Rory was joking about, you know, him and Emiliano were buddies. I mean, you know, how do you get into a match? I mean, you almost have to put something on the line or something to make yourself really,
sure.
really care about it. But I just, for whatever reason, the fear with single elimination was one thing and one thing only, and that is that the big names get knocked out, which would have happened. Rory would have lost. Jordan would have lost. That would have been it. I think that the simplicity of that and what it really means when you look at it, I think it adds a little bit to the drama. And, of course, if it's Tanahara versus Bill Haas, it is. You know, that just is what it is. I mean, those players played well enough to win. I don't think we should hate on that and get scared of the viewership numbers because of that if they're good enough to go on in advance. I mean, Tanahara played Dustin Johnson as well as anybody, you know, and this is a guy that, you know, before Wednesday, nobody'd really heard of.
I guess the one thing I'd counter to that argument is that the and the thing I left out, which is in the piece in Golf Week, is that we don't hear any more of the vagaries of match play crap. It's just drove me nuts that guys would just chalk everything up that bad that happened to them to the format, and that discussion has stopped. You have 3 days, and like you said, Rory had a bad luck situation, and there are going to be a couple of those. But over the course of 3 days, you felt like in all those brackets, for the most part, the best players won. Now, I would love to see the halved matches go away. And as this post I'm about to write for my site, I'd love to see them reseed on the weekend by ranking so that you reward those people theoretically. I mean, who knows? You know, Soren Kelton might beat Dustin Johnson, but you never know. And a couple little tweaks like that. But I just am so happy that conversation has gone away, that match play is this impure, fluky, goofy thing. And so maybe I'm overreading it, but that's just been, to me, a revelation from this tweak in the format, because I got really tired of hearing that. That got old.
Yeah, and I mean, Jordan Spieth mentioned before the week that he wishes, you know, a major, of course, the major being the PGA
yeah.
Championship, would go back to match play. I mean, I've been kind of preaching that for years just because it's the format we all play. It's the format that when you think about the way golfers take in the game, it's rare that you meet people that go out and play stroke play against. I mean, few clubs do it, if any. I mean, even the highest end clubs on the East Coast, the Wingfoots and stuff, use match play for their club championships. I mean, it is the format that we all embrace on a daily basis, and there's a major that used to do it, and it doesn't anymore. It would give it a very, very unique, really much needed, personality in a sense. I think it was cool to see, you know, top name golfer in the world and Jordan Spieth say, it'd be cool if a major went back to that, and I think the PGA would be the one that would probably do it.
Yeah. Well, it was played that way once, and I'm with this post I'm doing, I'm going to have a poll, and I was pondering, you know, wouldn't it be fun if the PGA Championship had a Ryder Cup-style points race? Because I'm leery of using the world ranking because that's become kind of a weird little fraternity situation where guys play events and rack up points. But have a PGA Championship point system where they track those players as the year goes, and maybe they tweak it a little bit to reward a certain way, and then you know, and probably it's pretty close to the world ranking, and those 32 are exempt to match play, and then you have stroke play qualifying at the PGA, and who knows, maybe you get a club pro that gets in on that last spot and plays the first round against Dustin Johnson, and I just think one, you'd be talking about the PGA and the buildup with the points, and then you'd be getting the tournament back to match play, which was its old format, and it would make it different and distinctive. And I feel like we've changed where television now would appreciate that. And obviously there'd be a little rigging going on there to make it a little stronger situation for the top players, but that's okay. They should earn that. They should get something for their efforts. Yeah. For being consistent and good at what they do.
Yeah, it was just, again, we love watching this. I mean, I think what the Zurich has done, it makes everybody excited for that event. It's an event that you would rather not pay attention to for the rest of the season. It would be another PGA Tour event. So, again, it's something different, and that is the key here. That's, you mentioned Keith. I mean, the European Tour is trying to do different things to bring interest and intrigue their way, and it's smart. I mean, he's basically having an attack on Thursdays and Fridays because he says they don't really matter. And, I mean, besides making the cut, they don't. I mean, it's a first couple of steps. But, you know, we are a week away from Masters Week, really. And, you know, we have Houston this week, and there's some big names playing. And Phil mentioned, you know, he wants to get into contention, so he gets those feelings, all that stuff. Dustin pulled out. But, I mean, the world focus is on the Masters, and we've got a lot of big names playing. So I just wanted to ask, first things first, where does Masters Week rank in terms of event you enjoy covering throughout your season?
It's a tie for first with the Open Championship.
And what's your favorite part about the week? I mean, is it getting there? Is it just being at Augusta?
Yeah, I think it's being at Augusta and seeing kind of the whole spectacle of it and seeing how they do things their own way, and it's its own little world, but it all kind of works in the end. And yeah, they have their weird ways of doing it to some people, and they want to do it their way, that's fine. They do most things unbelievably well, and it's just a pleasure to be there and to see how they go about running a golf tournament. And and then the back nine Sunday is always seemingly a pretty thrilling time.
Yeah, and I was going to ask,
once in a while, it's not.
Well, yeah, that was my question, we're getting to the point now where I think the way Dustin's played, you know, we've got Matsuyama that was playing great earlier in the season. We have JT. Rory's, you know, been very consistent. So is Jordan, besides really the match play week. I feel like we're building up to a Masters where we expect these guys to all battle it out. And most of the time when that happens, we're a little bit disappointed. So do you think there's a good chance that the hype will live up to itself considering where some of these top players are right now with their games?
I do. I just feel so strongly about the importance of the run-up to the event. And last year was the same situation in terms of you felt like every player you'd hoped was an elite player that you would like to see kind of have that big win or big week play well did. And I think that's one that just adds to my excitement that you feel like everybody is coming in playing well. Obviously this year you feel like everybody but the defending champions got something to hang their hat on. And then there's some interesting people like Justin Rose and Stenson who are kind of coming in quietly. And that always makes me suspicious too. You know, those kinds of players can at a certain age can pull that off too. So it feels like everything's aligning, and hopefully the weather doesn't create any issues, but I can't see anybody other than Willett where you just you think, oh boy, you know what's going on there. I have been very bullish on Thomas Peters, and watching him play at the match play last week, I don't know if it was, but his course management was what would be the word I would use? Horrible.
Questionable.
So that made me a little, oh my gosh, it was just weird. I don't know if he wasn't feeling well, if he was just, because I watched him at Riviera and he just seemed centered and calm and just really looking great. But gosh, Johnny Vegas was just a totally different player than he was in the match. And it was fun to see that difference in the body language. But he was somebody I've been very bullish on, even though he's a first-time participant.
Well,
not so much, not quite as much now.
Tanahara. I mean, I'm going to write this next week, but I mean, the guy leaned on his putter the entire week on a very tough track and beat some of these guys and took DJ to like I said, the 18th hole. I mean, it was impressive for a 38-year-old. You know, he's had plenty of success on the Japan Tour. He had a top five in a major before, so maybe a bit of a sleeper you could throw in on that Masters field.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to ask you this obligatory question here. Will we see Tiger Woods make a golf swing at any point during Masters week?
No, I don't think so. I don't have any sense that he's excited about putting himself in that position. I really feel like it's as much mental as it is physical at this point. And I don't get a sense he's motivated. The sad part is, which is what we've kind of known, the more he puts these things off and the more there's a relapse of an injury or there's a whatever, a relapse of a lack of desire or whatever it is that plagues him, the harder it gets to come back because you feel like, oh my gosh, people are going to be watching even more. Even though he kind of overcame that with the Bahamas return, which was clearly very stressful for him the first day, the way he was so obviously nervous and going through a major championship like pre-round ritual, and then the next day it was laughs and giggling and goofing off on the range. I told you how much that meant to him, and to overcome that, I was just so excited to see that because I just can't even imagine the pressure that he feels, and to see somebody overcome that, it just had me so bullish on the year, and now it's just gotten strange again.
Yeah, we asked that on that. I mentioned the Golf.com Tour Confidential. They asked the percentage, and I was the only one that said zero. And I think my point on that, and I think it's the same point you make here, is, you know, Augusta National is very beautiful, and it's got azaleas, and the grass is perfect, and the greens are amazing. But it's really, 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 really hard. Like, people forget how hard it is. You know, it's an increasingly difficult golf course, and I couldn't imagine making a return now after what's happened with his golf game this year at Augusta National. I mean, I feel like there's a chance if he did it, he'd shoot like mid-80s. I mean, you don't want to do that on the biggest stage in golf.
No. And he definitely does not want to do that. And I don't think he wants to put himself in that position. Then again, he showed up there in 2015 in a weird way. And he is very much somebody who is a creature of habit and feeling comfortable at certain places, and he certainly is comfortable there. So I guess there is that 5-10% chance that that's what he's thinking, but I find that hard to fathom at this point, given what's been seen and reported around town, that he's just not going out and playing rounds of golf.
All right, I'm going to give you a grouping of three names, and I want you to rank most likely to least likely to win the Masters next Sunday. Rory McIlroy, Phil Mickelson, Jordan Spieth.
Most likely of those three?
Yes.
Oh, Jordan Spieth, yeah.
And then, and so your ranking would be Jordan Spieth, and would it be Phil, Rory?
Ooh, I'd have to put Phil slightly ahead just because of the confidence he has with his driver again, I think, which he had briefly lost. And when he has that, he's confident in a lot of ways. But boy, Rory is hitting that epic a long way. And if he gets that going, wow, does that just turn that golf course into something so much easier and more fun to play when you can hit it 340 and have flip wedges in when other guys are hitting 7 irons. So, but gosh, Phil's short game, Shane, on the West Coast thing has not been talked about much. And I mean, he's had two rounds of 21 putts. Okay. that is incredible for a 46-year-old. That's amazing. He still has as good a short game as anybody on the planet. And his putting is probably better than it was last year. So the weird thing for him is his iron play's been awful. And Phil's been traditionally a very good iron player. So I just can't discount him at Augusta.
Yeah, last year just was one of those years you just have to almost throw off. I mean, he was playing well coming in and then missed a cut. It was really surprising. But
yeah.
I think, I mean, again, I really believe that Phil circles about 5 weeks a year now where his focus is a little bit sharper. He's a little bit more into it. You know, we've even seen it this year when he knew he didn't have a chance to win on the back nines on Sundays. You know, he shoots in the 40s and 42 at the Waste Management. I mean, it was really high number because, again, he's out there to win. I mean, he doesn't really care about a top five or a top eight finish. I mean,
no.
He wants to win events and win again, and it's been a really, 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 really long time since Phil Mickelson's raised a trophy, which is crazy to think considering how close
it
he's
is.
Been so many times.
But he's 46. Jack was 46. I mean, he can talk himself into some things. So that's a great group, though. I mean, they're all – I think they'll all be in contention. How's that for
I didn't include Dustin.
Correct answer.
Well, I didn't include Dustin because I knew he would be – I think he'd be a top on most lists.
Yeah,
if people aren't picking Dustin in their little master's pool, I don't really know what to tell you.
Unless,
I mean, my last question for you, and you were there during it, and I guess it kind of comes into this because we're hearing some stuff come away from their camp, but – I mean, are we going to see Jason Day play at the Masters?
I think we will. But boy, it's just, it's an increasingly odd situation with him as well, just because you sense he's, I mean, a lot of people were really hard on him privately about what went on in the match play. And I just said, I'm sorry. I can't agree. You know, his mother probably kicked him out the door. Based on the way what you've read about her in the past, she's a type, you know, she's tough, get out of here, go play, do your thing. And he got there and he was over putts going, why am I worrying about a 3-footer when I ought to be home? And how can I be missing taking her to the hospital for the surgery and all that? And I just don't think it was that complicated. Now, you could have a discussion about what kind of advice he gets, what the people around him were saying, and that they didn't kind of say, hey, you know, we can play the match play next year. You know, that's kind of more what I question. He's in an emotional state. He's an emotional guy. So I don't see being hard on him on this. It's a tough situation, and I think he did the right thing. I just wish he, you know, had probably figured it out before the tournament, but I don't look down on him for that. But I just, his whole year, he's just the energy's just been awkward. It just haven't felt like he's quite all there for whatever reason.
Yeah, and you were there in the press conference. Have you been in a press conference that A, surprised you, and B, was that emotional in your entire career?
No. No, that was when we got the request that he wanted to come in and talk to us. You're of course thinking, okay, well that can only be a few things. He's been diagnosed with something. He's got some issue. I didn't see that one coming. But yeah, no, it was very emotional, and I thought incredibly admirable of him to do that the way he did it. And I'm sure he feels lousy about taking up a spot and walking off the course in a match. But this is a kind of a life and death thing. And like I said, I don't think he got the greatest advice, maybe. But he was incredible. And I'm glad we didn't ask any questions. It was good. He just spoke his piece and cried and left and went on his way. And it was a shocker, though.
Yeah, it was when you watched it for the first time. I mean, I was calling the golf, so we didn't get to watch it, but we actually played it on PGA Tour Live, and just watching, you know, him break down like that. I mean, it was really, really tough to watch. And I mean, we were in the booth getting, you know, emotional watching it. I mean, you had to almost pull yourself back together. So of course thoughts, I mean, with that whole family situation, goodness, that was rough. And like you said, I mean, how can you do anything, much less try to play golf when, you know, your brain is obviously, you know, 900 miles somewhere else.
Yeah, and he took about 2 minutes to start speaking. It was awkward. He sat down and he started to talk, and he just couldn't. He couldn't. And Chris Reimer put his hand on his shoulder, and so you didn't see that in any of the other footage, but it was rather quiet, as you might imagine, in that room, and just a tough situation. So I hope everybody knows somebody who's lost somebody or has lost somebody to cancer. And you just hope that she pulls through, obviously for her own health. But he's obviously a very sensitive guy. And I worry about, you know, how it'll affect him too, because she's obviously a lot tougher than he is. She's just a tough mom.
That's exactly right.
She is. So, and he's the emotional, sensitive one in the family, and it's what makes him a great golfer in a lot of ways, but also, you know, makes him susceptible to this being a really a career threatening moment. So, but mostly it's just hopefully she gets well.
For sure. Well, what do you guys have coming up? You guys have Shack House this week and next. You've got some pieces coming out, you said, for Golf Week.
We are off this week. We are going to do a Masters preview and a Masters review. We're working on our guests, and I'm just going to be doing some preview coverage on my blog. I'm going to get into this variable distance ball situation because I think it's going to come up in the context of Augusta, and that the USGA kind of let out that they're thinking about. So, yeah, just kind of getting excited about the Masters. And, yeah, I don't know how much there is. What do you think? I mean, how much is there really to say? I think the fun is early in the week kind of getting a little look at the course, seeing if there's anything that might create a bias in the tee times with the weather or in the conditioning. I don't know what that would be unless it was just really, really soft or really firm and fast. And trying to make some picks and enjoying all the stuff that comes with it. So that's kind of my take on it. There's just not much to be said at this point, and there'll be a lot of tributes to Arnold Palmer
for sure. And then you will promise me you're still going to do the thing you always do where you go and check out the merchandise tent and give the full preview.
Yeah.
As when stuff's
still
available.
I'm definitely going to do that on Sunday. I always enjoy that now because it's also fun to watch all the drive, chip and putt kids go and do some shopping, and you run into them and you get to maybe chat with their parents or whatever. That's kind of fun. And, so there'll be full merchandise coverage, and I'm going to try to do – Marty Hackle and I did it last year. I'll try to do it again, kind of the Big Oak social fashion scene there. You know, some people bring it. Although last year we featured about three or four people who we then had to take the slide out of the slideshow because of some political corporate reason. And you're like, oh, for crying out loud, we're just highlighting that he wore a nice sweater. Jesus, yeah, isn't
– You wore it.
We didn't spot him at a brothel, for crying out loud. He's under the Big Oak. Calm down.
They're walking around. Fans can take pictures of them as well. I actually, I'm pumped about this. I've got some drive, chip and putt kits coming on the podcast later this week. So something to look forward to. Jeff, I appreciate your time. Always great to catch up with you. I will see you at Augusta. JeffShackelford.com. Really the best way to keep up with everything he does because he's all over the place. Morning Drive, Golf Central, Golf Week. Check out the Shack House. And we'll catch up again. Maybe we'll catch up. Maybe right before the PGA Championship as they try to change it to match play.
Cool. Keep up the great work, Shane. I appreciate you giving me a few minutes to talk.
Many thanks to Jeff Shackelford for jumping on with us. Make sure you check out his podcast, Shack House, and all the fun stuff he always rolls out at jeffshackelford.com. A reminder, this week's episode was brought to you by Ogio. If you're a cart guy, you need to go to ogio.com and take a look at that silencer bag. This thing is the Escalade XL of golf bags with every compartment you'd ever want in a home away from home on the golf course. OGIO is a leader in golf bags for those that like to walk and those that like to ride, and their selection is rivaled by no one when looking for a new golf bag. Trust me, your bag could use an upgrade. Check out OGIO.com right now and see what the silencer is all about. That'll do it for this Clubhouse podcast. We have a few more set for this week. We're going to be busy at the Clubhouse, so make sure you either take a little bit longer to drive to work or back home from work, or add a couple of gym sessions or a longer walk with the dog later. We're going to have a lot of golf content for you the next few weeks and the next few days, especially as the Masters gets set to go. I'll be at Augusta National. If you're there and you see me, come say hi. I'll have a couple of those Clubhouse koozies in my back pocket, and that'll do it for this episode. We will see you later this week.